lot to cover. We were a few minutes late getting started, too. Let's get to Genesis chapter 1. And we're going to finish day 4 today. Genesis 1, we're going to look at verses 14 through 19. Last week we started this day, day 4 of creation, and today we're going to finish that. And the next 2 weeks we're going to have missionaries here, so we won't have this study the next 2 weeks. So just so you're prepared for that. Okay, so Genesis chapter 1, verses 14 through 19. And maybe I could get David Van Wingerden. Would you mind reading this for us and then opening in prayer? That's all right. Thank you. We've been foregoing the review that we normally do, or we've traditionally done, so that we can stay more devotional in our study. Well, it's just kind of a property, really, of almost being more devotional and keep moving forward. But today I do want to spend a little bit of time reviewing because we're a second week on the same lesson or the same text, so I thought maybe it would be wise to do that. I'm just going to go through this very quickly with you for what that helps you, hopefully, and we'll... Just then we'll continue on. So let me just say a few things about what we said last week of this text. First of all, we talked about the fact we've moved on from the separating and the naming. We've moved from that and into an area where God is making and adorning. You see the verbs change, the way the wording is used changes. And so we've moved on from that, from day 1 through 3, and then into day 4 we move on from that idea. In fact, that kind of started happening really in day 3. What we learn from this, this text here in some respects is this, or from this concept is this. First of all, God establishes order and parallelism. We talked about that last week, order and parallelism. Days parallel other days, just as there are many other parallelisms in the scriptures. We talked about the fact that on day 1, he created light. On day 4, he creates the light bearers. On day 2, he did something with waters. On day 5, he created fish. On day 3, he created land and water, and on day 6, he creates those things that live upon the land and are, you know, have a necessity of land. So we see these things and need plants also. So we see these things kind of coming out, and we see the parallelism that happens. So we see that from this overall concept of day 1 through 3 and day 4 through 6. We also talked about the fact he builds in a very orderly fashion. There's one thing on top of another, at a pace that suits him and his needs, and yet provides for our needs as well. And that's truly a God that carries out a purpose. See, there's a lot of times, I've been reading a lot of political books lately, and a lot of books on you know, what's going on in the Obama administration in regards to wars and economic and things like that. And it's a little bit interesting to me to see that, because there comes a point where men make a decision that's good for them, and it's no longer good for other people. And that happens a lot. That happens in all of our lives at some point or another. We tend to make a decision at some point that's good for us, knowing it may not be good for other people. Or we just avoid the decision altogether because it's not good for us to make it at this time. We see that a lot if you think about our political news in particular, handling of the economy, wars, things like that. You see that a lot. God, on the other hand, creates things purposely in tune with his purpose, and yet they are perfectly in tune with our good. as well. That's what we see in creation. When he does these things and he builds these things one on top of the other, he doesn't consult with us about what we want. And yet he creates something that's perfectly suited to our needs in all things. And we're going to see that a little bit more today, even looking at the sun and the moon and things like that. We also talked about last week that he frustrates men. In evolutionary thinking, the sun, from a scientific perspective, and the theory of it is that the earth comes from the sun. And yet when we read through this account of creation, we realize that the earth was created before the sun. And it's something very different. And so it's just really very, very different in this. Not only do we see that, we see that even the plants were already on the earth before the sun. And yet you'd say, well, there's no way plants could survive for certainly a long time without the sun. And yet they were already there. There was this higher order of life already there even before we had the sun. So we think about that and we realize the fact that God in this order of things he does shows some things to us about himself and about who we are. We talked last week about the qualities of light. What is light? We said it's necessary for life. It is associated with heat. There are certain types of light, by the way, that don't have any heat. If an LED bulb or something like that doesn't have any heat, it's a different type of light, by the way. But generally speaking, we would say light and heat go together. And certainly from a historical perspective, certainly when the Bible was written, and most of the time, you know, up until recently, there was not the idea of light without heat. That type of light was always there. We just hadn't harnessed it. And then the final thing we says that light divides. Where there is light, there is light, and where there's not light, there's darkness. And so there's just simply a division between those two. We also talked last week about what does this say about God. It indicates the immense power of God. Do you remember how we said that shows the immense power of God? There was two ways we said that in this text here. It says he created the sun and the moon and the stars also, as if it was an afterthought or just something else thrown on top, whipped on top. I compared it last week to, we're going to have a meal at my house today, a Thanksgiving meal at my house because we were out of town and we decided we'd do something today with our more immediate family. And so we're going to do that today. And if my wife were to add something, whipped up some hors d'oeuvre or something like that, it would just be, well, I did all this, plus I whipped this up, and I'd be like, well, this hors d'oeuvre's amazing. This is really what I love to eat. This is actually my favorite part of the meal. It's a little bit like that, not that the stars are our favorite part, but the point is that he brings, you say, well, the sun is enormous. We've talked about the size of the sun and its capabilities. The moon is enormous, and yet you'd say, well, on top of that, he just created all those stars. And we talked last week about how many there were. There was three sextillion, which is a three followed by 23 zeros, I believe is what it was. A huge amount of stars. And that, by the way, that's just a guesstimate. When we say a guesstimate, we are saying that the number 2 years ago tripled. from scientific perspective, they went from one to three, literally just 2 years ago. In their observations and their analysis and things like that. And so we don't know how many stars there are. We don't know that. But it says, and God created the stars also. And that shows his immense power. Did that just by his spoken voice. And then the other thing we would say is that in the fact the plants were made the day before, and we talked about the fact that the plants could go a day without light. You could put a plant in a closet and it's still there tomorrow. But you can't take heat. You can't take the heat of the sun away from the plants for any time, really, or else they die. If they were in a complete cold, and think of the absence of sun, no sun whatsoever, plants wouldn't survive very long at all. I mean, very, very short time period. So that, when we have a frost warning, people run out and throw, things over the ground trying to preserve those flowers just a few more weeks or days or whatever they might have left. So the fact of the matter is that we have this, we see that in the immense power of God in these two illustrations in this. We also see the fact that God has power over the physical world in which light with no known source exists and has all the properties of light as we know it now. It had light and it had heat in that way. Up until day four, we still had light and we still had heat in the world. It also shows the fact that God uses other objects to do his work and fulfill his purpose. He is light. And originally, his light was the day, the only thing that created a day and night effect. We already had day and night for 3 days. And now he takes something else he creates and says, now you will serve that purpose. The purpose that my light, this inherent light, whatever this light was that he created on day one, that doesn't have a known source. He creates sources or objects to do that light, to provide that light on day four, and it carries the same qualities as the light that he had. Still the same length of day and night, same amount of heat, same amount of light, from the same direction in all likelihood. Nothing changed in the day and night as a result. Everything was exactly the same. It shows that God is able to create objects that perfectly carry his purpose. Now, is that encouraging to you as a Christian? You are perfectly able to carry forth his purpose in your life and in the lives of others. Now, when we fail at doing that purpose, what's the problem? We have not submitted. We're not wanting to carry out the purpose that he's given us. That's the problem. We don't want to carry out the purpose. But it should be an encouragement to us that he can, in fact, use us as vessels fitted for honor. And that's really what we are, ultimately. We're vessels fitted for honor. It should be an encouragement to us in our Christian lives and in our Christian walk that he can use us perfectly for what he wants to do. By the way, even when we fail, he can use that perfectly for what he wants to do. How did the third king of Israel come about? The wisest and richest king that expanded the kingdom to its greatest borders. How did he come to be? I'm talking about Solomon. How did Solomon come to be? Out of an adultery, out of sin. See, even when we fail, God can still use our failings, even in that regard. Now, that does not mean we run around and commit adultery and say, look what the Lord's going to do. Do we sin that grace may abound? No, we don't. That's not what we're permitted to do or told to do in Scripture. That has an effect on us, and it had an effect on David, without a doubt. But God can use us for his purpose, is the point in all that. And finally, we talked last week and finished with, it shows the benevolent nature of God. And we looked at three different texts that tied this idea of the light, this idea of him creating the sun and the moon and the stars, to three different things about himself. And the things we saw were this. In Psalms 136, 7 through 9, we saw the loving kindness of God. Three times in three verses, it said something about the sun and the moon, and it said something about the loving kindness of God in a parallel between those two. And then in Jeremiah 31, we looked at the fact that God had tied his promises he makes to Israel to the existence of those created lights. As long as those lights are there, then his promises continue. And then finally in James 1:17, it says he is the father of lights. And just like there is no shifting or turning of the time, there is no shadow of turning with him. See, time is very, very, we have it down to the microsecond, pretty much. We have atomic clocks that keep time to the microsecond. Every once in a while, you'll read some article about where they've shifted it slightly. They've shifted it by 1/1,000,000th of a second or something like that, where they said, we've identified a problem, we need to fix that, so the whole world needs to change. Does it affect us? No, we don't really notice it. The point is that time is very predictable, and God is very predictable, very faithful. Maybe we should say that. He's very faithful. I don't know if we can predict what God's going to do. We can't. But he's very faithful. He's very consistent in everything that he does. And he's the father of lights. And so his goodness to us as the father of lights is very, he's very faithful in that regard. And he gives us every good and perfect gift. Okay, that's a review of last week. Any questions over that? Okay, let's go ahead and move on then to today. We've got a few items to look at today to finish up. First of all, let's say this. He establishes two specific lights. Now, what two specific lights does he establish in our text here today? The sun and the moon. Does it name them as such? What does he really establish? So we look in our text here and it says, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from night. Let them be for signs for seasons, for days and years. Let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth. And it was so. And then verse 16, God made the two great lights. That's what I'm talking about when I say he made two specific lights. The two great lights. And what does he call them? Yeah, the greater and the lesser. Greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. So we have this greater light and this lesser light. Now let's think, so that's what we have. That's all we have in our text, is greater and lesser in that regard. We talked last week, he doesn't name them. We'll have a comment about that in a moment. He doesn't name them the way we name them. The greater light. Now what do we know about this greater light? What do we know about it? It's what? It's bigger. It's absolutely bigger. It's super hot. That's a good point. With it comes heat. With this light comes heat. That's an important point to note. Does the moon generate any heat? It does not. It generates no heat whatsoever. You get no heat from the moon. Let's just think a little bit more deeply about these two lights. What's the quality of the lights of the sun? Or what's its source? Itself. Yeah, exactly. Its source is itself. What is the source of light of the moon? The sun. Okay, that's an important point to note. We're going to talk about that more in a little bit. But in fact, I moved my outline around a little bit. I'm probably thinking about, no, I should have left it the same. But the point is this. Let's just summarize it this. The one to govern the day, we call it the sun now, but the one to govern the day, this greater light, is the greater light. It is a direct light, and it is one that creates heat with it. Those are the three things we would say about it. It is the greater light. It is a direct light. It has itself as its source, and it is one that creates heat with it. The one to govern the night is the lesser light. Of the two great lights, it is the lesser light. It's what we call the moon, and to an extent, we would say this. So actually, we would just say this. It is an indirect reflective light. It has no source of light to itself, none whatsoever. It just doesn't. It has, in fact, why do we have a full moon versus a partial moon? The what? The Earth blocks some of the light. That's the only reason. It's because of the position of the sun at that point in the month that we don't have a full moon. The moon doesn't have any source of light itself, but the moon in the shadow of the sun blocks some of the sunlight hitting the moon, and so you only see what's reflected. That's all you get to see at that point. And so that's how we know. So it's an indirect reflected light. That's what the moon is. And it has no heat with it, as we've already said. So these two lights, the greater and the lesser, one to govern the day, one to govern the night, have different qualities about them. One is the source of the other one, and one carries heat and the other one does not. That's what we could say about those two things. Now, note that he does not name the sun and the moon. He doesn't call them that. That comes from a historical transliterated words in some respect. It's not important what their name is. As we saw, they are bearers of his light. You know, they are, once again, we said last week, let me make this distinction. The word for light used in verse 1, and I'm sorry, not verse 1. The word for light used in verse 3, let there be light. And the light that is used in verse 14, where it says, let there be lights, is two different Hebrew words. Now, they're closely related. It was or and maor. But all it really means is this. Does anybody remember what it means? Or and maor? O-W-R and M-A-O-W-R? Yes. That's exactly right. One is just simply saying light. If I said turn the light on, I would be saying turn the or on, O-W-R. If I said turn on the lamp in the corner, I would say turn on the M-A-O-W-R. That's all it is. So the point is this, is that he doesn't name them, but they bear the same light qualities. Whatever light came from previously, they bear the same qualities as what he has. And he doesn't name them because they're there to do the same purpose once again. Their purpose is the same as what his purpose is what he was creating and providing already to this point. Now, does somebody have Psalms 147 and verse 4? Somebody pointed this out last week. I actually had not come across this verse, and they said it, and I said, well, I got to go look it up. So does somebody have Psalm 147:4 on your paper circled? Okay. Okay, so he does name the stars. So we're not gonna sit here and say, well, he never names any of these things that he creates. He actually names all those stars. All that number, that big number, that 300 followed by 23 zeros, 300 sextillion stars, I guess is what it was. He does name them. Now, if you just thought for a moment and said, why does he name the stars? Because we don't know their names. In fact, he doesn't tell us their names. Why does he name the stars then? Show ownership. That's very good. He shows ownership over them. He names them. See, when you get a dog, your kids want dogs, right? They want some kind of a pet. When they get a pet, what's the first decision to be made? What are we going to name the pet? What are we going to name? And you give your kids a hand in that to the extent that they have, you know, you might have some veto rights over it, but you generally say, now, what do you want to name the pet? So let's have a family meeting and let's talk about what we're going to name this dog or this cat or this fish or whatever it is. That shows ownership over it. It shows a responsibility over it. It also shows a familiarity with it. So God is familiar with all of this. Now, if he's familiar with the 300 sextillion stars that he's created, or more or less, whatever that number is, and it's a lot, if he's familiar and has ownership and is familiar with them, he knows them all by name, what does that say about his relationship to us? He has ownership and familiarity with us also, in the same way. See, there's no reason to sit back and say, well, God doesn't care about creation. He created it, and then he just lets it go. And we'll just do what... Once again, this is more evidence of the fact, when you're talking to people out there in the world, and they say, well, God's far away from us. You know, he doesn't pay... When you hear a comment like, God doesn't care about the outcome of this game. You know, you say, this person prayed that God would... they'd win this game or something. You say, well, God doesn't care about the outcome of this game. Is that a true statement? It's not a true statement. God does care about the outcome of this game. Now, not for the reason you might think of, well, I just want to be a winner versus that guy being a loser. For a whole lot of other reasons that happen. God does care about the outcome of that game. And in fact, he's directing the outcome of that game. He has a familiarity and ownership over our lives. Everything in our life. Even all those stars out there that we know nothing about, he knows a lot about. He knows every molecule in every one of those stars. He knows the count of the hairs on our head. He knows when the sparrow falls. He knows what's going on in his creation, and he's paying close attention to it. He's not a God who's far away from anything. He can't be far away from anything. Why? Well, it would die, absolutely. If it does, if he doesn't sustain, in him we live and move and have our being. See, if he's not there, we don't have any of that. The fact is that he has to be there for us. He's very familiar with all this. Now, what does it say then about, what does it say, and we talked last week about this, what is one of the primary things that men worship? If you went into a pagan culture that knew nothing about the God of the Bible, and you said, now, what is your religious practice here? What would you find? Yeah. You see people worshiping the sun, you know. So if you go to an Aztec religion, they worship the sun. You know, that's what they would do. They worship the sun. And so the point is that we are not to worship. These are not to be worshipped, these things. They're created by the one we should worship. They were not created to rule men. What were they created to do? They're created to rule something. What? Pardon me? The seasons, or the day and the night specifically is what it says here. They're created to rule the day and the night. It says, where does it say that at? Signs for seasons, that's correct. Okay, verse 18, and to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness, to govern the day and the night. They're not here for us to rule us, in other words. They're not our rulers. They're there just simply to govern the day and the night, to rule the day and the night, effectively. To say it is now day, it is now night. That's really that's their purpose. That's what they do. They're not here for us to worship them. Does somebody have Job 31, 26 through 28? Anybody have it? Okay, I'll read that for you, because actually I want to be looking at it myself, so I'm turning to it. Job 31, chapter 20, verse 26 through 28. My pages are sticking here. Okay, 31, 26 to 28. If I have looked at the sun when it shone, or the moon going in splendor, and my heart became secretly enticed, and my hand threw a kiss from my mouth, that too would have been an iniquity calling for judgment, for I would have denied God above. What is it to worship the sun and the moon, to throw it a kiss, as it were? It's idolatry. It's denying the God who created them. That's the reason that you go into a pagan culture and you see that worship of sun and moon, because it's a denial of God. It's man's enmity with God playing out in their religious practice. It's a denial of God. So they're not there for us to worship. In fact, to worship them would be to deny God. We can't add them, you know, we can't add them suddenly into the mix and say, well, let's, you know, God plus his sun and his moon. No, none of that. None of that. It's very clear. We're denying God to add that in there. God hangs these light bearers in the heavens like we would hang a lantern in a, you know, from a tree or from a house, from somewhere in the house. Now, when you hang, you know, some of us had some power outages recently. You might have hung a lantern in your house or a candle or something like that. You might have hung something like that in some respects. Would you expect your children to start worshiping them? No, you wouldn't, would you? You wouldn't say, well, if your kids start saying, well, let's bow down and pray to the light. Dad just hung. No, you'd say, well, Dad can just take it right down anytime he wants. He's going to put it up and take it down as he wants. He has the one. He's the one that has authority and control over this light. It's not just the light. It's him that has authority and control. So we're not to worship these things. And then the final thing, let me just say about this, that he doesn't name them. Just to say the sun comes from the word sol, S-O-L, which we, of course, know is like solar, which migrated to the more common name sun, but we still use solar quite often. And the moon in English, which is luna in other languages, so you hear lunar, comes from the Latin word mensis, which is for month. That's all that means. It's just for month. So that's how we got the names. But note that God does not name them. He names the stars, but he doesn't tell us their name. Now, we've named some of them. Most of them just have a number associated with them. Unless you go on one of those star registries and pay your $29 and get your piece of paper that says a star has been named after you. That's kind of silly. So the point, though, is that God does not name these. He does name all the others, and he doesn't tell us their name. We're not to worship them. He knows them. He's familiar with them. They're perfectly carrying out his purpose. But beyond that, they really have nothing to do with us. Although we'll talk in a minute about what they do for us in that regard. But we're certainly not to worship them. Okay, so let's talk about the spiritual truth illustrated here. There is a spiritual truth. At first, I thought about deleting this. I'm going to tell you, I thought about deleting this whole section. But the more I studied it, the more I thought, there's probably something here to this. There probably is something here. So I'm going to say something now. This is where we get into a devotional, spiritual view of something God creates, and you take it with a grain of salt, because these are my thoughts. I would not say they're not corroborated by anybody, but I'm going to tell you they're my thoughts. This is where we can get into trouble, but I don't think we will with this, so I left it in. So let me say something about the spiritual truth illustrated here. Some would say, well, actually, I would say it, that we are the lesser lights. Now, why would I say we are the lesser lights? Because God's illustrating something when he gives us two lights, and they have different qualities. Now, let's think about those qualities again. The greater light is a direct light, and it has heat associated with it. The lesser light is a reflected light, and it has no heat associated with it. Why would I then say that we are the lesser lights? Because we reflect the main light, and we have no heat. We generate no heat. We bring no heat with that. We don't generate anything else with that. The best our witness can do, the very best our witness can do is to do what? Point to the greater light. Say, listen, I'm just reflecting that over there. It's not me, it's that. It's, I have nothing. You take that one away and I become nothing. I'm dark. You don't even know I exist. As soon as that one goes away, I become nothing. I find it interesting that God creates two lights like this, with these qualities. So I started thinking about why. Why does he do that? And I think he's illustrating something with this. I think he's illustrating with the properties of the greater and the lesser light. He's doing that. We don't bring any heat with us. We don't generate anything in terms of heat, in terms of warmth. He's the greater light. When he's present, there's always light present. When we are present, some light is present, as long as we're reflecting him, but there's no heat. We don't bring any heat with it at that point. Now, if I were to say it that way, what do you think heat represents then? Fervency or maybe just simply life. I mean, the ability to have life. We said before that the plants could have existed for a little bit without any light, but they can't exist without any heat. Life can't exist without heat. It can, for a while, exist without light, but it cannot exist without heat. We have to, and we don't generate any life of our own thing. We just reflect. You want to say something? It is. It's energy. It is. That's exactly right. It's energy. See, energy comes from. We don't bring any energy. The best we can do in our witness to men in dark is simply be a reflector. That's the best we're going to do. We're not going to generate any heat, and we're not going to flip on our own light of our own self. In fact, as soon as we try to flip on our own light, it's a problem. We're no longer reflecting at that point. We're not doing any good at that point. So when he is present, light is always present. When we're present, some light is present, as long as we're reflecting him, but there's no heat. Now, the sun, let me give you some facts. I thought this was interesting. Because I wanted to make sure I was right that the sun or the moon doesn't reflect heat, and it does not. But along the way, I also found out some other things. How much brighter do you think the sun is than the moon? A lot. Yeah. I didn't know how much. But to be fair, on a moonlit night, I can walk down the street no problem. In fact, I can walk through my yard, and I can almost read. You know, I can almost read on a moonlit night. So I started thinking, well, maybe there's not that much difference, you know, between the two. Is it twice as much, three times as much, 10 times as much, 20 times as much? How much do you think it is? It's a lot. It's a big, big number. Let me tell you what it is. It's 450,000 times brighter. To put it in terms of lux, which is what you measure this light in, the moon is 0.25. That reflected light, by the way, by itself, it's nothing. But it's 0.25 lux for the moon, and it's 100,000 for the sun. If you were just to say the sun is 100,000, the moon is 0.25. That's, you don't even compare the two. You really can't even compare the two at that point. And once again, the moon only is light because it reflects. When we consider this with a thought, now, so when you think about that, you say, let me just ask this much. John the Baptist made a statement. He must increase, but what? I must decrease. Right now, does anybody see the moon outside? Now, maybe it's a cloudy day. But even if it was a nice, bright, clear day, would you see the moon? Is it still there? It's physically still there. Where did it go? The light has overpowered it. See, the light of the sun is overpowered. So when John the Baptist says, he must increase and I must decrease, that's as true as scientifically almost as it is spiritually. I mean, that's just what happens. When we think about the fact that John the Baptist was a great reflector of the Son of God the greatest of all prophets, as he said, the least of all, the one that would least try to create his own light, that's what he was. He said, he must increase, but I must decrease. And that's the way we're supposed to be too. Spiritually, we have to decrease, and we don't even say this. We could say this from a statement of our life. We must decrease, so he must increase, or so that he can increase. We could say that because we can't hide that light, can't we? I mean, that's why we're told let our light shine before men. We're told to do that. But the point is that ultimately we will always decrease. We will decrease. The moon doesn't have a say in that matter. When the sun comes out, the moon decreases. That's just what happens.
And there's really no choice in that matter, in that deal whatsoever. So in the fact is when the sun comes, the moon, even a full moon, disappears. It's just going to be gone. Now, the Puritans used a phrase to describe the pulpit. You know what that phrase was? They used the phrase light and heat. In fact, there's even some papers written on that. The light and heat. To describe the mind, the light of preaching, and the heat, which they described as the heart. Now, when they described the heart, they actually were talking really about the pastor's heart, that you must bring light and heat to the pulpit. You must bring the teaching of the Scriptures, and you must bring the passion or the energy of the Scriptures that was said before. But we'll just consider it maybe to be the heart in that regard. When we as lesser lights reflect the main light of God, we don't bring any heat. In that regard, we really don't bring anything. There's nothing I can transfer. I can tell you what the Scripture says, right? I can go to any person in the world and say, here is what the Scriptures say. Thus saith the Lord. In fact, that was said many times to the Israelites in the Old Testament. Thus saith the Lord. Did that always change their behaviors or their attitudes? Sometimes it did, and sometimes it didn't. If there was heat that was also coming with that, if God added in his own heat, his own source, then there would be a change in them. If he would give them a new heart, there would be a change in them. But otherwise, there was nothing. No matter what the fact, sometimes the prophets were told, now listen, you're going to go out and you're going to prophesy, and here's what's going to happen. Nothing. Nothing's going to happen. They were told that right up front. You go prophesy, and nothing's going to happen. They won't change, but you keep on prophesying. You keep on reflecting, and there'll be no change. Unless I bring that heat, unless I bring that energy, unless I bring that new source of life, nothing's going to happen with all of this. So it's light and heat. When we as lesser lights reflect the main light of God, we bring no heat. We can speak to the mind of men. We can bring intellectually the thoughts of Scripture, but we cannot change the heart. Now, when we are light, men who are trying to find their way in the dark appreciate light, don't they? What about men who are trying to hide what they're doing? What's the response when you reflect God to other people? Some of them like it, and they say, they're showing me something. They're showing me the light of God. And some of them don't like it, and it perturbs them. And they'd rather just kind of get back into the darkness and just, you know, sneak back into it. That's what happens. That's why I left this section in here. Because I think there is a spiritual principle being shown with the properties of these greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. See, when we're out there in the world with darkness, we're just trying to reflect is all we're trying to do. We're not going to bring any heat. We will not create a new life anywhere. That's going to be up to God to do. But we will reflect. And that response to that reflection will be one of two things. People appreciate it, that are trying to find their way, and people will not appreciate it and say, I'd rather just kind of hide. Can you please turn that off? I don't want that on. That's what happens. Okay, any questions over that? Okay, let's move on then. In creating the lights, he established them for three purposes. So let's talk about these three purposes. First, well, what's the primary purpose of these two lights? Or of these lights? One to govern the what, and one to govern the what? Yeah, day and night, light and darkness. That's what they're feared for, to separate the day from the night. They separate the area of darkness from the areas of light, which establishes day and night. So the first purpose is just day and night. That's what he does when he creates them. Secondly, and Chris mentioned this before, it creates signs for seasons. Now, are these signs for seasons your horoscope? No, they're not. They're not. What are they? What are signs for seasons? Says he defines what they mean when he says, "And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years." That's what they're here for. They're a visible sign of time. Does somebody have Jeremiah 10 and verse 2? So we're not to be like the nations. We're not to be out there looking at these for the signs of the times of the heavens. Well, we're told not to do that. That's a pagan way of thinking. That's why I use the term pagan lots of times when I describe a group of people you might come upon, and they worship these things. He warns us against using them for this. That's not what their purpose is. We know our days by the cycle of light and darkness. In fact, we're coming up pretty soon on the shortest day of the year. Now, what day will that be? 21st of December. It's the same every single year. We know the years by the shortest day and the longest day in many respects. See, our years are kind of set up a little differently, just calendar-wise. But if you wanted to, you could just start and say, well, the year starts on December 21st and ends on, you know, the brightest day, or you know, ends again when it comes around. That cycle fulfills itself. And so that's how we know the seasons. We watch the light. We see the days are getting shorter. The days are getting longer. In fact, in some respects, Christmas, we know it comes from some pagan background. The idea of Christmas, or the idea of the time, where are we told to celebrate Christmas in the scriptures? Told to remember his birth. We're not. We're never commanded to do that. Now, why then would we do that on December 25th? Yeah, where the sun was rising. See, the shortest day of the year was December 21st. You may not have known it for two or three days thereafter that all of a sudden the sun is doing what? Lasting longer. So that's when you would note that. You'd start saying, wait a second, it's, you know, you think the earth was ending. If you were approaching December 21st, the light is fading, the sun is dying. And then all of a sudden the sun is back. You know,
that's what you see. So the fact is that we do know, I'm not making a comment necessarily about Christmas there, although there are some things to be said. That's not for today. The point, though, is that there is a cycle of light and darkness throughout the year. And we know that. And there's a cycle of light and darkness each day. We know our months how?
How do we know our months? From the moon. We follow the cycles of the moon. We know, in fact, we even know when Passover is going to be from the moon. So we know these things from the moon. We know our years by the length of light versus dark the sun provides. So that's the first purpose is just simply say night and day. Second purpose is seasons. And the third season is they illuminate the times or illuminate things. Verse 15, let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, and it was so. So they're just simply here just for the purpose of, so we know where we're going. We have light. Things grow.
We have all the properties of light that we need, which we do need light, of course. That's part of why he created it. So those are the three reasons that that God creates light. Any questions over that? Yeah, that's, well, it's pretty definite everywhere. But it is definite everywhere, without a doubt, for those people. It might not be you have harsher climate here in that, or more distinct maybe climate, I should say, here than what there is other places. It's not San Diego. You know, it's not 72 degrees and sunny every day. That's the way it is there. Although even in San Diego, it's interesting. If you go there and you listen to local news, they'll give you four different weather forecasts, depending on if you're at the coastal, inland, mountain, or on the other side of the mountain. You'll hear four different weather forecasts there. Okay, so by application of the text, what does this show? Let's just spend a few minutes on this. By application of the text, what does this show? Well, first of all, it shows this, that God created the things of the universe around the earth as his center of creation. We've talked about this already a bit. That God created the things of the universe around the earth as his center of creation. We do not know where the earth lies in the universe. You know, as far as I know, it's in the middle, or it's, I don't know where it's at. I'm too small to know where the earth is at, and so, by the way, is every scientist. Are we in the center, or are we on the edge? Where are we? All we know is we look out, and we see an equal distance with a telescope in every direction. We previously saw that there's not any scriptural evidence of another earth, a parallel place where God also created and is working with that group of people or objects or whatever that is. We see here how God creates the heavens and the earth and then adds this to meet the needs of man on the earth. In other words, he says, well, I'm creating the heavens and the earth, I'm creating water, I'm creating land, I'm creating plants, I'm adding light. I'm adding this to this for light on this object in all the universe. I'm creating these lights for light on this object in all the universe, this specific thing we might call earth. We see here his focus of creating these bodies is the first two have an effect upon the earth and the other stars also. In other words, these things are created for the earth. They're created for the things that are upon the earth. That's all these are here for. There's no other reason for them to exist. Of all the 330 sextillion stars that are out there in the universe, there's only one that he creates specifically. And he points out very specifically and says, that's for light upon the earth, a greater direct heat-laden light upon the earth. That's what he does. So we see that God creates the things of the universe around the earth as his center of creation. Second thing we would say is this. This indicates that all things were made with age, and yet without the age man assumes. So man scientifically says that the universe is 13.3 billion years old, and the earth is 4.5 billion years old. And part of the reason they get that is because they say, well, that sun or that star is that far away from us, and yet we see its light. We can still see its light. Now, light takes a distance. We don't think of it as taking a distance to travel because we flick on light, and it's immediately on the other side of the room. It's very, very fast. It's the fastest thing we would know. Whole studies are going on with huge, you know, things at the CERN Observatory in Europe, purposely to say, is anything faster than light? Is something faster than light? And there, to this point, they almost thought there was a few months ago. And they said, oh, we had a slight miscalculation. And it's not faster than light, in fact. There's nothing, to this point, there's nothing faster than light. So we have this thing here that is faster than, you know, of this light that's out there. The earth was created with age. When the plants were put there on day three, what do plants need in order to, let me ask you this much. Did the soil have any nutrients in it on day three? Yeah, they would have been there, right? I mean, on day three, there was already nutrients in the soil. Where do nutrients in the soil come from? They come from God, but today we do what with the garden in order to give it a little bit more time and composting and things dying in it? And, you know, that's what we do. We put things that have died previously. We turn over the corn that's left over and we till it in and, you know, plow it into the ground because we want that nutrient to be in there. That's what we want. And yet there it is on day three. It already has the nutrients as if things have already died when nothing had already died at that point. Nothing had already passed on. I think so. I think all the qualities that were there were there. God created the earth. We've talked, you know, we could say, and we'll get to it, Adam wasn't created as a baby. The chicken and the egg, which one came first? The chicken. That's what came first. God said the chicken was created first. So it wasn't the egg, you know. That wasn't the case. The chicken came first, and then the egg. Go ahead. Chickens. That's right. There were chickens, many of them. A male and a female, for sure. There was a lot of them. And so, you know, he populated the earth. It has age in it. In the same manner, the light on day four, though coming from a long distance, was there as soon as he created these celestial bodies. Adam, when he looked up at the sky on day six, saw a lot of stars. They were a long way away. They'd only been created 2 days before. They weren't millions of light years away. I mean, well, they were millions of light years away, but they were already present and visible at that point. They were already there. They were all, in fact, scientists have to go through some real issues of acceleration of the universe and actually use the word inflation in describing it to say, well, wait a second, if the stars are that far away and the Earth is only this old and the stars are only this old, then how can we actually see them? Wouldn't they not be here yet? And yet we still can see them. And they have to go through some, you should read up on it, it's kind of interesting. But the point is that, you know, we did not have them many millions of years ago or billions of years ago. The stars were older, you know, they're as old as what they are in the Bible. That's all they are. But the light was already present. Because God created them for what purpose? Just stars, them, or the sun, or anything. Why did God create those things? For man's use. And so as soon as man was going to be put on the planet, they had to be there already present and visible and doing what they were. God created them for a purpose. He didn't create them for some scientific purpose. He created them for man's use. So we use the stars traditionally we've used the stars for what? Navigation. They had to be there already. They were already there. God had already created them. They were already, you know, being of signs and seasons and all that. They were fulfilling their purpose on day four immediately. They were already doing what they were supposed to do. Okay, let's move on. We also see this. The first time that something is clearly created for man's use. So we have things created to this point. You say, well, land was created for a lot of things, and plants were created for, you know, other animals to eat and things like that. You know, all these, we see this is the first time something is clearly created for man's use. The times and the seasons. Do animals care about that? They don't care about it from the idea. They don't look at the calendar and, you know, a squirrel doesn't look at the calendar and say, you know, winter's getting kind of closer. I better start gathering some nuts. They just do it because that's what God has put within them. That is their nature to do that. Man, on the other hand, starts looking at the calendar and does what? Well, it's time to go, you know, do this kind of fertilizer. And, you know, we use the Scott's four-part system, so we should be doing this kind right now because this is the time. We look at the bag and say during these months, oh, it's a little too early for that. See, these times and seasons are for us. He creates that specifically for us to have. That's something he did for us, not for anything else. It's not helpful to the animals in any way, shape, or form. The very placement of these things, especially the Earth's distance to the sun and to the moon, are perfect for our life here, to sustain everything. They're perfect for our life here. In fact, the sun just has to tilt, or the Earth just has to tilt a little bit for us to know. We don't even change position, really, although to some extent we do, elliptically and around the sun. But really, we only have to tilt a little bit to change seasons. That's really all we have to do. You say, well, did we change? Did we change our distance? No, we didn't. We just tilted a different direction. It would be like, you know, when I open in the winter, if I open the front door to my house, we have a glass door on the front of the house and then a door behind that. So when I open the big door and just leave the glass door open, do you know what my dogs like to do? They like to go there and sit right in the sun. All they have to do is just change a little bit and immediately they're 20 degrees warmer than they were in the other part of the house. They're in a different place. That's just how much, the fact is those things were, that was created for us. We only have to tilt a little bit in order to be a different way. So that's all for us. He placed them in specific spots so they would do all of his purpose. And the last thing this morning, why have a specific light of sun and moon if he had already created a light and distinguished it between day and night? In other words, we already had day and night. We already had light. Why create these? Well, let me look at it from two perspectives to answer the question. First of all, and pastors talked about this in the study of the parables in particular, from a heathen perspective, what do these light-bearing objects do from a heathen perspective? We go into a pagan culture, what do we find? They worship them. They become a distraction for people. They are something that hides God effectively. Because now we're not looking at God, we're looking at the objects he's created. We worship the creature more than the creator in that regard. And so from a heathen perspective, it's a way to hide God from men. Just as the parables, as Pastor talked about, were there to hide the clear manifestation from men, the light of the sun, an object that is not God, allows men to explain a world without God. So scientists say, well, there's no God, we just have the sun, we have heat, we have, you know, I can explain to you why we're this way. And they would explain it by using the objects that God has created. They don't explain it by just simply looking at God and explaining it that way. They can scientifically explain light and heat without including God, but they do so to their detriment. It's to their disadvantage they do that. From a believer's perspective, when we consider the time on the fourth day after the separation symbolically from sin, remember we talked about that, kind of that separation that occurs, separating and naming on the first few days. We have to separate from sin and name it sin. We have to confess our sin, say the same thing God says about that in that regard has occurred. The light is very focused onto one being. You know, we say, where does our light come from? The sun. That's where it comes from. It's very focused on one being, and it's reflected in one body representing believers. It's just reflected in one body. The moon represents believers. We don't have anything else that reflects like that does. Now, we have a couple of hymns we sing, and I pointed this out to Pastor one time. They bother me, or they have bothered me in the past. One of them is the hymn, Like a River Glorious, and another one is Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee. Now, do you know why they bother me? Somebody open up a hymn book here. Joyful, is that the very first hymn, I think? Like a River Glorious isn't the first hymn in our hymn book, though. Nope, that's all people that on earth do dwell. Okay, let's look for either one of these. Like a River Glorious or Joyful, Joyful. I'm at the J, so I'm going to find that. Okay, I'm not finding it now. I know it's in here. 587. Okay, thank you. Let's just take a quick glance at it. I told this to Pastor a while back. I pointed out to him we were over at the nursing home, and we had sung this one of these hymns. And I said, you know, that always bothers me when we sing that. But let's go ahead and take a look at it. Where's it at? Yes, it says sun, S-U-N. It's the third verse, the second line down. Traced upon our dial by the Son of Love. And Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee says, has the phrase that says, joyful music leads us sunward, S-U-N, in the triumph song of life. Now, that always bothered me. Why do you think that would bother me? The Son of Love would be, in my opinion, S-O-N, and, you know, the sun above is S-O-N, and I just look at it from that perspective. However, unless I consider it in this view here that we've just now talked about, that God represents the singular source of light the way the sun does for us. In other words, it's an illustration. God's sun, S-U-N, is an illustration of the light that he provides. He's the direct light. He's the one that brings heat. We're just reflective light. So why does he create these light-bearing objects and then places them there? Well, for an unsaved person at enmity with God, he says, that's evidence there's no God. For a person who says there is a God, he says, oh, I see the picture of God in that. I see God in his creation. I see him showing himself in that regard. So we consider that unlike ancient men who misinterpreted and misapplied scripture to assume that we were the center of all things, we know that we revolve around the sun. For us, that's the center of all things. In other words, the center of our solar system is the sun. In many respects, the center of our world is the sun, S-U-N. The center of our world as Christians is the sun, S-O-N. So it's an illustration of that. And the last thing I'll say is this. If day one was a general light of knowledge, day four is a specific source of light, God. So there is a pursuit of knowledge, and there is a pursuit of godly knowledge. And they are two separate things. A lot of people, like the Greeks, in Acts 17, were always wanting to know something new and hear something new. It was a pursuit of knowledge. Paul came there and said, let me tell you about a very specific knowledge, a very specific God that you're not thinking about, but let me share that with you. Well, let's close with just a very brief reading from Psalms 104. I'm sorry, I'm taking about 3 minutes too long here. Psalms 104, and I just want to read three verses. And then when we come back in 2 weeks, we'll be on that day five then, or 3 weeks from, it'll be 3 weeks from today, I guess. Psalms 104, I want to read verses 19 to 23. He made the moon for the seasons. The sun knows the place of its setting. You appoint darkness and it becomes night, in which all the beasts of the forest prowl about. The young lions roar after their prey, and they seek their food from God. When the sun rises, they withdraw and they lie down in their dens. Man goes forth to his work and to his labor until evening. It is God that's ordained all of this. Not only, you see in those verses, does he ordain the sun and the moon and the night and the day, he ordains what things do under those things. Right down to what the lion would do. He ordains how we are to live in that sun and in that moon, or light and darkness. And it's gotten all of a sudden brighter in there, I feel like. Okay, let's go ahead and close then the word of prayer, and we'll be dismissed to be in the worship service in a little bit. Our Father, we thank you for your text that you have given us this morning and for your word that is so prevalent in our lives. And we thank you for the many examples in your creation of who you are, of your personality, of your very person, of your creative power, of your continued sustaining of our life and your continued guidance and familiarity with our life. We're thankful for that. We pray that we might be a reflective light to the world. We ask, Father, that we would never hide that, but that we might be quick to display that whenever it is cast upon us. And so we thank you for who you are in all these matters, and pray that you be with us even in the worship service, be with Pastor and all those who lead, that we might worship in spirit and in truth. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.